Hi Nick, how are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks Martin, you?
Good, thanks, yeah, not bad at all.
Seems strange sitting here and doing a podcast recording, doesn't it?
It's been a long while, hasn't it, yeah.
4 weeks, I think.
4 weeks, I think, yeah. That's
it's like an eternity in internet time, isn't it?
It's gone so fast though, that's the weird thing. It feels like it was yesterday almost.
Yep.
Yeah. Your interview with Andy Bryce was good, I think. I had a listen to that, I thought it was really good.
He's an interesting chap, isn't he?
So he is, yeah.
10 years worth of experience of bootstrapping and... The interesting thing I find is he's stuck to his guns and it's just still him doing it and that's always what he wanted. And
yeah, I think that's a strong character, isn't it, to be able to do that, you know. To he's obviously had the shiny objects from time to time, but he's managed to stick to it and it's obviously paid off. I think I can learn a good lesson from that. While we're talking about Andy, we should mention that the Southwest Bootstrappers meetup that he hosts is on Tuesday the 25th, so... I think that'll be...
A day after this comes out,
so it might be a bit short notice, but in case anyone's interested, that's in Swindon. So.
Yep. But some good news to get started with. We've now got a little newsletter pop-up thing on the Bootstrapped website.
Fantastic. Woo-hoo.
So we're going to start doing an email newsletter, as everyone else does.
Yeah.
It's quite surprising, actually. Quite a lot of listens happen to the podcast, through the website itself.
Right.
Which has always surprised me.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So we use Simplecast to host the podcast. So if anybody's thinking of starting up a podcast, certainly suggest that. It's a cheap solution for getting something up and running quickly.
It's very easy as well, isn't it?
Yeah, but they didn't have anything for integrating your own kind of JavaScript little plugins or whatever, or applets or whatever.
Yeah.
And so we kind of put a request in for them to add that, and it took about 3-4 months, maybe 6 months for them to do it. But we can finally add in AppSumo now, so we can... We've got the share buttons down the left-hand side so people can share the podcast and
that's cool.
Sign up for the newsletter and we'll let you know when new shows come out and stuff like that.
Fantastic. Yeah, that'll be good.
Excellent. So what have you been up to?
Well, obviously, been away on holiday, hence the Andy Bryce interview. But the holiday was fantastic. It was great to shut down for a week, basically, and turn off. We had a fantastic villa on the island of Corfu, the Greek island. It was brilliant, actually, because it's quite mountainous and we were kind of halfway up one of these hills, mountains, whatever you want to call them, and overlooking like a port and the coast of Albania across the way. So it was just fantastic. I wasn't even bothered about sitting out in the sun, really. We just sat on the sort of veranda area looking out across the ocean, across the sea, rather, onto the coast, and it was just fantastic, just sitting there. Really nice. And that was good, yeah, very good. But of course... The usual thing happens that before we went on holiday, I left a few plates spinning. You know, you just think, well, I'm never going to finish this, so just get it so it'll keep going for the week.
Yeah.
Came back and all hell broke loose, and so had to catch those plates as they fell.
So did you notice, because Greece has been in the news quite a lot recently, did you notice any of the issues around the economy and immigration?
Well, I think we mentioned on a previous podcast that I was a bit concerned, not so much that it would be a problem for us, but more there might be not stuff in the shops that because we were self-catering and we'd need to buy food and stuff. But it was absolutely nothing. We didn't see a thing about that. The advice was to take cash, but everywhere we went, we're taking cards, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, as far as the buying stuff and you know, enjoying it as a tourist, no problems. We did have a... So the villa we had was through one of these villa companies, you know, that you book. And so there was a rep that came round one day, bit pointless really, but she came around and gave us a bit of sort of local sort of information, and we asked her about it because we said we hadn't seen anything, and she was saying that actually the islands themselves kind of support each other and themselves through the tourism and everything, so they've got their own little economy and they're less affected than the mainland, and apparently it's quite serious in the mainland, you know, lots of people are really really struggling, but you don't really see it so much on the islands, so I guess that's that makes sense.
That's good. I remember we met up just after you got back as well, and you said you were really struggling for the first time, I think, to get back into the workflow.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, we only went for a week, and yeah, I mean, I had these things straight away on my plate when I came back, and I just found it really hard, really hard to get back into it. I could have done with another week, really, to properly get bored of being, you know, relaxed and then and then be itching to get back to it, but...
So that doesn't usually happen to you then?
Well, usually a week's enough and I'm usually itching to get back to it. But yeah, I just found it hard. It might have been because the things I had to come back to were problems rather than
new projects or shiny new stuff you've thought of while you're away.
Yeah, that's it. So how have you been? What have you been up to?
Yeah, good. I'd like to say I've been busy, but I don't know, like you, you sit here trying to think of what you've been up to for the last 4 weeks.
Yeah.
I guess that's where the journal comes in use, actually. So I had a quick read of that. What did I do? But it's summer holidays, like you say, which for most people, I guess with older children, leads to childcare issues. But with Sophie being a teacher, she's off, off work. So I guess the summer holidays is like the time where we get to spend a bit of time together. And it's been nice because Isabel's nursery is still open for the school holiday period.
Yeah.
And so for 2 days a week, she's been going to nursery still. So me and Sophie have been able to spend a bit of time together and go out for lunch and do nice things like that,
yeah,
without having Isabel around, which is quite a shock after you've had a little person around for two years, kind of taking up your needing full attention, and you kind of sat there wondering what to talk about and trying not to talk about Isabel because she's not there and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's been good, actually.
Good.
And it was Isabel's second birthday on the 14th of August. I'm trying to think, that was about a week ago, wasn't it?
Yeah,
just a week ago. Last Friday was all taken up with that, and then we had a family barbecue on Saturday.
Oh, brilliant.
Things like that, so that's good. They're actually off at the moment, Sophie, as well. She's got her 2-year-old test.
Oh, right.
At the moment, see how she's getting on developmentally and all that kind of stuff.
Is that little red book that they fill in all the sort of stats in and stuff?
Yeah, but they're stupid questions like, can they thread a piece of cotton through pasta? Crap like that. And obviously with Sophie being an early years teacher, so she teaches reception class, she's got some real bugbears about these questions and stuff, so I feel sorry for the poor person who's in there going through this questionnaire with Sophie. I had to kind of say to her yesterday, I was like, you know, this person didn't develop this questionnaire, she's just there kind of like ticking the boxes and stuff, so it's not a personal attack on her, I don't go in there personally accusing her about these questions being right or wrong or whatever, but... Yeah.
That sounds like me. I struggle with that sometimes. I have to catch myself, particularly on the phone. You know, if you're talking to somebody trying to sort something out, I have to count to 10 a few times. And it's not their fault. They're just dealing with a query.
But our in terms of our holiday plans, they were kind of thrown up in the air because we were, I don't think I mentioned it on the podcast, I mentioned about going away to Tenby and Saunders. I think, but we were trying to buy a kind of holiday flat over there since April when we went away. We put an offer in, it had been accepted, it was all going through. But then there were some issues with the a couple of the surveys that the solicitor was doing, and then there was someone else who was also who was initially trying to buy it, pulled out, but they came back with a higher offer. And something dodgy went on in terms of, because we raised a few queries about the deeds and so on and the leasehold, that the again, this is estate agents, isn't it, whether you can trust what they say or not.
Yeah.
Hello, my estate agent friends. I do have a couple. But, so we got a phone call saying that we were gazumped, and these other people put in a non-refundable deposit, having not done any survey stuff or anything through the solicitors. And because we'd raised these two questions to the sellers, I think they'd been a bit naughty in terms of taking a non-refundable deposit, knowing that these other people haven't done any of the survey stuff yet. So I think we had perhaps a lucky escape. It was a holiday place that we were going to use ourselves and let out, so it's not like we were buying a house to move to, so we weren't that, it wasn't that much of a important thing.
We weren't heartbroken.
No, and we kind of took the view of, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be.
Yeah.
So that fell through, but interestingly, while we were going through the process of that, and it took a long time, to be fair, I kind of was having the thinkings of, you know, we're buying this one place in a single village, you know, that's going to be where we're going on most of our holidays now, you know. What about moving around a little bit? Do you want to visit other places? So I was kind of thinking, well, you know, is this the right decision anyway? So perhaps it was fate that it fell through or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And so as soon as I had a plan B in my mind anyway, if it does fall through, sod it, we're going to get a motorhome or a camper van. So as soon as it fell through, on I think it's the Friday, the Saturday, me and Isabel were out looking at motorhomes, checking them all out and that kind of stuff. And I think the next week I spent researching camper vans and going to look at some new ones and used ones and so on. And first of all, there's a big demand for the VW camper vans. We decided motorhomes weren't for us because they're a bit big.
Yeah.
They're mainly designed for two people, obviously, because retired couples buy them and go touring around Europe and Britain and stuff.
Right.
And so we thought camper van would be more useful for us because we could perhaps use it as a day-to-day car as well.
Yeah.
But they hold their value really, really, really well. Because of the time of year being summer holidays, people are after them to buy them now so they can go and use them straight away, similar to our situation. And so I rang out for a couple of second-hand ones and that had been on auto trader for like the next a day or two, and they'd already been sold.
Wow.
And the kind of feedback was like, the bloke was saying, I could have sold it 20 times, you know.
Yeah.
And so we did find one on Friday night, went to see it Saturday morning and bought it that Saturday morning. So
wow.
So yeah, we've got a nice shiny camper van.
Yeah, I spotted that on my way in this morning. Yeah,
it's bright white, isn't it? So yeah. It's quite you can't really miss it.
How'd you find it for space? Because I had a look in, and it's obviously big because it's a camper van. But I can imagine with three people in it continually, it's going to be a bit. Well, I suppose it's not continually, is it? You're out most of the time.
So this is part of, I guess, we did a trip straight away.
Yeah,
I would say straight away. We bought it on a Saturday and we went away on the Monday, because I wanted to just get the first trip over and done with, because otherwise we'd be building up to it and it would be a big event. Whereas we were only ever going to go away for like one or two nights. And Sophie's family were down in Devon, so we went and kind of got a campsite near them and then could see them as well. And it's okay, but it was a bit compact, like you say. The roof goes up and you can push the double bed up as well, so you can stand up in the van when you're there. Okay. And making actions of raising the roof, not that it's necessarily right. But... So we're hoping to go away next week for a week, and so we bought a drive-away awning thing.
Right, okay.
So that's something you can add to the side of the van and then put stuff in there and then zip it up and go away if you want to go visit a beach or something. And so that will help.
Okay, so it's like a tent when you're not when the van's not attached. Yeah.
So you're not going to leave valuables in there, but if you want to leave like a suitcase of clothes and stuff in there, then
that's quite cool.
That'd be good. But yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it sleeps four adults in theory.
Wow.
Me and Sophie have been sleeping on the top bunk, but obviously with her being pregnant, it'll be a question of seeing how long she can get up there. But people have said, you know, will the top bunk take two adults? I did quite a lot of research on, there's a really good forum, vwcaliforniaclub.com, I think. And the kind of feedback is, you know, if you can get up there, then it will hold your weight. So as long as we can still get up there, we should be all right. Yeah, but Isabel loves it because she sleeps in the boot. It's really funny. Like when we were taking her, because I took her, I think I was looking after her that day because Sophie was up to stuff, whatever. And so we went to see the new ones and stuff. And so she was testing them all out as well. She's having a great time, like checking out all these boot beds and stuff like that.
Kids really love funny. That sort of thing, don't they?
And so because she tested them out, when it actually came to us being away and her jumping into this boot to go to sleep, she was just like that was what she'd been testing it for. Yeah, so that was like her bed. But we had some excitement on the first trip as well. In terms of Sophie booked the place where we were staying. It was last minute. You know, peak holiday season, so there was a few places with electrical hookup, and so she found this place in Woolacombe, and there's this big hill down to Woolacombe Bay. I don't know if you've been there.
I have, but I don't remember.
But we're driving down this big hill, and so you can see all the way down, and we can see all these fire engines on the way down to the hill, and literally it was our campsite that had this big fire in the swimming pool, sauna, stroke reception area.
Oh god.
So the whole campsite was closed when we tried to go in first time. Like 3 hours later it opened finally, but all the electric was turned off at a campsite. Fire. And then it was blowing an absolute gale that night and pissing it down with rain. But thankfully, the camper van stood up to the test really well. So that was actually a good test, I guess, for the first night. Whereas all these tents were like nearly blowing away, but we were like in our cozy, warm camper van, so it was good. So I put Fantastic. Up a blog post of our first trip away. So
did you?
I can link up to that in the show notes.
Look at you, cool.
And I guess the plan is, well, because the... You know, the VWs, like the Beetles and the original camper vans, have got good communities around them, and people do write up their experiences. And so I thought we should do the same. And it was good fun, so, yeah.
Excellent.
But I think the theory of... So I've been thinking about, I think, because Sophie's got a Mini, but we're going to have two kids, so we're getting rid of the Mini. I think Sophie's going to have my car. And so the camper van will kind of become my day-to-day car as well, so...
Right.
Because I don't drive around very much, but the theory is it'll also be a mobile office as well, so...
Yeah.
Can get away and record the podcast in
road
some
trip.
Nice places. Or do road trip,
that's cool.
So yeah, that's all good.
Yeah, it looks good. I must admit, it's the sort of thing I've thought about having a go at some point, because I quite like camping, but I'm just a bit too sort of I don't know, I like my creature comforts a bit much these days to do that. I wouldn't mind camping for a couple of days.
I'll give you a tour of it like later that. Once
yeah,
you're
yeah,
doing this.
Let's have a look.
So I'm following Breck from Bootstrap with Brits, Bootstrap with Kids, sorry. But
a bit of a smaller scale, though.
But this is the UK, isn't it?
That's
not
true,
the US. So I haven't got the big Airstream caravan.
Yeah.
I did look at those. They're massive.
They are enormous, aren't they? Yeah.
It's the same with the VW camper van. You know, there's the base price, but that just gets you the camper van. And as soon as you start adding all the add-ons and stuff, it just goes up and up in price.
Mm.
And I can imagine with an Airstream, because they are like, you can do them out like palaces. I can imagine the end price of a full spec'd out one of them. It would be the price of a house, wouldn't it, I bet?
Yeah. Cool.
So that's been good.
Excellent. Well, I mean, obviously I had a great holiday, but since I've been back, I've been flat out. It's been crazy. So, you know, like I said, I came back to a few problems that Nothing major, just things that needed to be done that I didn't really want to do. But that's fine, got them sorted. But I made a big mistake. So the dead project that isn't dead, so Joined Up Data, rumbles on. So at the moment I'm getting probably one through a month, which is fine, because most of it is stuff that the thing can do. So it's just like about half an hour of my time just to do it. So it doesn't probably make any money, but you know, there's a flow of customers, and so I'm kind of reluctant to turn it off in case in the future I need it, you know. So I just left it going, and I got one through. It actually arrived while I was on holiday, and then when I got back I sort of started to speak to them about it, and it was all fine, you know. It was quite a lot of records, so it was the most expensive, you know, of the options that you can do for Joined Up Data. And then they sent me an email asking if they could do this particular manipulation on phone numbers, and it didn't do that, so I should have said no, sorry, if you want your refund, fine. But of course, the developer in me and the shiny new object lover in me said, let's have a look. And a few Google searches later, and I found out there are ways of doing it, that I, you know, there are libraries and things that I could use. So I foolishly replied and said, well, give me a few days, but yeah, we should be able to do that. The whole weekend of developing later, I eventually got something that worked. And then, well, I say it worked, but of course it's buggy. And so on top of a full-time freelance project and other stuff, yeah, I've shot myself in the foot, really, and lost the whole weekend working on this, which is, you know, it's just a lesson for future, really. Even, you know, we talked about Andy Bryce being stuck on the, you know, not deviating from the path and being disciplined, and I just obviously lacked that discipline last week. So yeah, that was a big problem. But yeah, I mean, things have been going well otherwise. Before I went on holiday, when I got back from holiday, the first week back, I met with, I've said before, I had two potential customers. One of them signed up and I'm doing the project for that, and the other one was probably, but not sure. I met with them last week and definitely sort of in for it. So they want it in September if possible, so I've got a kind of a deadline of September to get.
It's good having a deadline. I've been trying to set you to a deadline for ages, and I know. Don't commit to it.
I know, it's good. So yeah, so I've got a deadline for them, and I've agreed with them sort of like the minimal functionality. So this isn't going to be the products available, people can sign up online for it. It's just going to be for them. And there's probably going to be some of the things that the system needs to have done by me manually in the background, like some of the setup and stuff. But yeah, it's good to have that deadline. So September, hopefully in September, I'll have a...
start or end.
A live mid. Yeah, so I said mid-September, but I also sort of caged it as it may slip to the end of September.
Yeah.
But they were all right with that. So,
okay.
So that's good. Yeah, so that's exciting. Related to that, I fired the two developers I had before I went on holiday.
That's going to be my next question, yeah.
Well, the quality of the code and everything was fine, but there were occasional instances of them going AWOL without sort of telling me, you know. So we'd agreed an amount of hours that they'd do per day, minimum, and if they did more, that's fine by me. And it wouldn't happen, you know, and I'd be like, well, so I'd message them and get no reply, and then sort of catch up with them, and they said, oh yeah, I was ill, or oh yeah, this happened. So I let it go a couple of times, and then before I went on holiday, I thought, well, I'm going to be away for a week. I've given them enough work to get on with for that week. Can I trust them to have done this by the end of the week? And I just thought, no, I can't. You know, that was the answer. And so I thought, well, that means I need to get rid of them. I need to cancel them. So, you know, I ended the contracts for them both, sort of amicably, and gave them decent reviews because they were good. It's just this one issue that I had, and moved on. And so I've signed up another developer now, who obviously is taking a little while to get up to speed, which is a bit of a worry because I've got this mid-September deadline. But he seems to be better at least doing what he says he's going to, you know, in terms of the hours, doing the hours he said he's going to do. So hopefully that'll work out. Yeah, it's a difficult thing though. I'm finding that a lot recently with Odesk, Upwork as it is now. It may be that I'm not doing enough due diligence in the recruitment, but I'm getting a few people through that just sort of go AWOL for a while.
But that's the thing, isn't it? It's so easy to find people on there.
And
because, I don't know, because it's not a formal show up and interview type thing where you can judge a character and
yeah,
you know, find out if they're late to the interview or not. And, you know, yeah, I don't know how they dress. That's a stupid thing to say, isn't it? But and it is just easier to hire people and fire people, which is one of the benefits of it. So
yeah,
it is more of a trial and error thing, I think.
Yeah.
And once you find a good person, then, you know, they're a keeper.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can see it from their point of view, really. If they're, if they've got a number of clients or a number of people that use them regularly, or even just they want to fill their time up with work, they're going to keep going. And, you know, as I just talked about, I managed to waste 2 days of my time. Well, it wasn't waste because I've built this stuff now, but that came out of nowhere. And, you know, for these guys, this is the same thing's going to happen. They're going to be working on a project and have a problem or something, which means they have to spend 2 days on it. So I guess maybe one of the ways to get around it would be to sort of require commitment to your project and no other projects. Maybe I should do that, but it's a bit reticent to do that until you've tested them out. So it's kind of a chicken and egg situation, really. But anyway, this guy seems to be pretty good at the moment. He's took him a while to get up to speed, but we're doing okay so that now. So
good,
yeah.
That's exciting.
Good. Yeah, it is. Hopefully it'll work out.
So I think in terms of work this year, I'm giving this year a title now.
Have you?
In terms of, it's the year of me figuring out what I don't want to do. I guess,
is that a long list? Things you don't want.
Well,
to
it
do.
Is getting a long list now. Yeah, I guess at the start of the year we had our ideas, didn't we, about we were going to start these projects and chart our progress through them and stuff, and it's supposed to be a useful podcast of actionable advice and so on and so forth. But it hasn't really worked out that way, has it? But you know, we spoke to a couple of people about that, and they said it's interesting to hear the other side of, you know, entrepreneurship and the doubts that creep in and things like that. So I'm not too worried about it. But anyway, so, you know, for people who've listened to me waffle on for the past 6 months or whatever, I know that I've started a number of projects and given up on them and stuff, but I think they are kind of projects that have been on my list for ages, or things I wanted to test out and do. So the actual fact of trying them out and then realizing that's not what I want to perhaps invest the next 5 years or 10 years of time into is actually a worthwhile exercise. It's getting rid of those shiny new things, I guess, from the project list.
There's nothing worse than having something in the back of your mind nagging away that you know it really can get you down, that sort of thing. So yeah, I think if there's no urgency for you to have the product out there and selling, then, you know, that's not, it's not the end of the world to do that. I don't think.
And so the algorithmic trading thing is the latest thing to kind of kick in the dust,
is it?
And so I'm still interested in the trading and doing the naked trader approach of doing it all manually and looking at the fundamentals and trying to find undervalued companies and stuff. But the algorithmic way of doing it, you know, using an indicator, whether it's moving averages or crossover divergence and all that kind of stuff. When I got back from holiday, I spent 3 days looking at that and found a good site with some end-of-day data that you can pay a small subscription to and get the files emailed to you of all the closed-day prices. And I did all the work of building a database and programmatically calculating some of these indicators and stuff. It was all working, but there's two sides of it as to why I've kind of knocked it on the head and said I'm not interested. Is the first one is kind of, if you do have take this certain indicator and your algorithms or whatever kind of indicate that you should put a trade on, you've got to put a trade on because you're working on your wins being more than your losses. So in theory, there could be a lot of trades on at any particular time. And if you don't put a trade on, well, that could be the one that, you know, takes your percentage above the win. So you've got to have, you could in theory have a lot of trades on at any particular time. And the second thing is, I guess this is related to that, is I did put on a few trades based on these indicators, and then I just sat there all day watching IG.com with the numbers flashing to see whether I was right or whether those indicators were right or wrong. And I kind of thought to myself, well, first of all, I don't want to have the risk of having lots of trades on at any particular time. And secondly, I don't want to sit there all day watching IG.com with just numbers flashing at me all day. That's not a particularly good use of time. So the kind of fundamental approach of just, you know, having a few trades on, you know, whether it's five or six companies you've invested in, you know, perhaps because you've got stop losses in place, you know, checking them once a week to check whether there's any news come out about them, what they're doing, that kind of stuff. That kind of approach is a lot more interesting to me at the moment. So,
okay, and is that's different, probably because I don't understand this, but is that different to the trading algorithm thing where you've got lots of trades? Can you not put stops on those as well?
You can do, but, and I was, but I don't know, it's just a fact of having lots of stuff going on. I guess when you go on holiday, you've got to still have that going on, running in the background, and the stress of that. And it's nicer just to be able to have six trades on, the stop losses in place, and you can, in theory, forget about them if you want to, come back and check in a month and see what's been going on. And you know, at the end of the day, I have been doing quite well with those, that trading approach as well. So,
that's good.
So that's been good. So that's one thing I've crossed off my perhaps I want to do list of algorithmic trading or quantitative trading. So that's good. But what I have been putting some time into is the golf.io project.
Yep.
So I bought that domain name ages ago for something to do with golf, and I wasn't quite sure what. And so I decided to set myself a quest of all the golf courses that I play. And this is a quest to prompt me to get out and play more different golf courses. So the one thing I've seen on lots of golf-related websites is they have reviews of golf courses, but they're quite small reviews, and they don't have very many nice photos of golf courses either.
Mm.
Like even my golf course, Calcutt Park, if you do an image search for Calcutt Park, there's not many nice searches, images show up in Google of the holes and stuff like that. So the theory is to play some courses, or as many courses as I can, write them up and take nice photos as I'm going around.
Yeah.
The theory is to take, you know, two photos of each hole, so one from the tee and one of the green and stuff, and write up about it. But that's proven to be quite a lot of work.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah.
Well, so this has been quite a shock, actually. And I think part of this is because my life over the past, I don't know, 3 years or so has been lots of small little tasks.
Yeah.
So send out an email newsletter, write a tweet, do this, do that. And these are all things that, like, so it can be a long to-do list, but each thing only takes 5 or 10 minutes, mm-hmm. and then you kind of tick it off saying, yep, made that, done that.
Yeah.
And so it's been quite a shock having, like, one to-do item, write up blog post or whatever, and it ends up taking me, like, 2 or 3 days to do.
Yeah.
Of, like, downloading all these photos, figuring out which ones are good, you know, cropping them, doing so on and so forth. And it's been quite a shock of, like, one to-do item taking 3 days.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's because of my inability to focus, because I've been so used to these small tasks and just getting them done and then going and checking Facebook or Twitter or whatever.
This is where I fall down with the whole 20-minute time boxing thing, you know, the Pomodoro technique and all that, is because a lot of the tasks I have are like that, big, chunky things. And I know you can break them down into smaller things and maybe 20 minutes here, 20 minutes there, but I always struggle with that, yeah. And
But I've had to do that to a certain degree, so... Yeah. I'll set out the whole, like, 1 to 18 holes, and my next target will be just to get 2 holes done, then have a quick break, then get another 2 holes done.
Right.
But then I just still end up with the task of getting the blog post done.
Mm.
I think it is a case of me not being used to how long a good piece of work takes.
Yeah.
So that's been fun anyway, and we'll see how that goes. I've had a few related golf domains that have had some links going into them, so they've had some natural Google search going to that I've all Direct 301 directed to golf.io.
Okay.
So hopefully that'll give it a quick boost. I want to see if that gets a bit of momentum in terms of getting some search traffic to these course reviews.
So they're specific sort of articles that you've got?
Yes.
So you'll move them across? And
yeah, I've moved a couple of them across.
Yeah.
Done a couple of reviews of a few pieces of golf equipment that I've got that put up, and Gareth, who I've been helping out again with the Golf Pro, I spoke to him yesterday about getting other bits and pieces of equipment to review, which he's happy to help out with, so that'll be good.
Excellent.
So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
And one interesting thing that I have kind of learnt is I set up a separate Twitter account to kind of grow a Twitter account around the website and stuff. And when I had it as like a more corporate account, so it's golf.io, you know, we're an online magazine that does course reviews, equipment reviews, and so on and so forth. I couldn't get any followers whatsoever to it. I was following people, doing lots of tweets, especially over the last weekend, because it was the last major of the year, so I was tweeting about the major and so on. And I thought I'd do an experiment and set it up as a more personal account. So I changed the Twitter username or URL, slug was still golf_io, but I set the display name as Nick Swan and wrote a more personal thing, such as, you know, I'm a golfer who writes a bit, blah, 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 blah. And that got lots more followers. So we've kind of had that experience with Voucher Codes Pro of struggling to get any traction for the corporate account as well.
Yeah.
And I think people are just so want to stay away from the corporate accounts that, you know, people are more interested in following individuals than corporate accounts are just going to push their products or whatever to.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've heard that sort of thing before about, even with a corporate account, having a picture of a person as the image rather than a logo or something tends to work better.
Yeah. So that's been interesting. Right?
That is interesting. Yeah.
Hmm.
Cool. So, I think I'm just ploughing on with the kids club stuff. You know, I'm going to try and get that working, and I'm going to have to get involved with it some more. So I've been learning a bit more Laravel and PHP as time goes by, more out of necessity than anything. So I had to do, when I met these guys last week, I had to do a demo for them. Yep. And of course, I just got rid of two developers and brought on a new one who couldn't really do much at that time. So I had to I was knee deep in that for a day, trying to get a demo to work properly for them. And that's okay. I quite like it, actually. The best thing about it, so some days I think, why the hell did I do this? I should have just done it in ASP.NET. Then I could get, you know, when I do have to get my hands dirty, I can get straight in. But then I'll want to do something and I'll find a library that does it and just bang, it's there. Whereas in ASP.NET, I always found that a big problem was that you might find something that does something for you, but you have to change it or, you know, whatever. Whereas there's so many libraries and things that you can just import and get on with it, that it's fantastic.
I guess, with a lot of libraries and stuff, people build them, don't they? And then get library or project fatigue or whatever and give up on them and stuff. And because ASP.NET's been around for such a long time, there's lots of libraries developed 5 years ago that people don't support anymore. Because Laravel's a relatively new framework, isn't it? All the libraries are new, and so
a lot of it seems to be sort of PHP stuff that's been out there for a while, which people have then made work with Laravel, or it just works already or whatever. And I mean, I've been impressed with it, really. Most of it seems to be fairly up to date. But once you've got the code as well, you've got the code. So if it works for you now, and then in the future it's not supported anymore, but you need to provide update, you need to change it in some way, then you've got it, so you can do that. But so far, touch wood, it's looking good.
Cool.
Yes, and the other project, which I'm doing a bit of website work for as well, that's been interesting. So I've got a designer as well working on that. So I've set up a WordPress site for him, and he's plowing away on that. That's been a real problem over the past couple of weeks, where it's been difficult, is that I've not been able to sit down and spend enough time planning out the work for them, the guys that I've got working on it. So I've had to sort of respond in real time on Skype and things like that, rather than actually give them sort of 3 weeks worth of work in advance. And then
but you still need to have that communication, though, because you don't want to give them 3 weeks worth of work and then find out, like you found with some other guys, that aren't reliable, that 3 weeks they haven't done it. So.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And so that does need to happen, but there's been a bit too much of it. It's been more a case of a Skype conversation about the plan for the next 2 days rather than a Skype conversation about questions about the plan, sort of thing. So I need to get better at that. And so I'm hoping it'll probably be this weekend, but I'm hoping to put a plan together on that. So that'll be good.
Cool.
So have you got anything else?
No.
No?
I've got a couple of stuff things.
Have you? Oh, I was going to talk about running for a bit, because you use the Strava app as well, don't you?
No, I don't use it. No, I've used RunKeeper before.
Oh, okay. Well, the Strava
app. I can be convinced to switch.
Strava app is really good. I really like it. But I managed to get a run in while I was on holiday in this sort of mountainous area, which was a killer. But I thought, I've never done a foreign run, so I've got to do one. And I managed to do that. That was all right. It was about 6 kilometres, but it was hard work. And then when I got back, I was at Darts, and a couple of the guys at Darts are runners, and they use Strava, and they were saying, well, why don't you follow some people? And they followed me, and I followed them. And I've been out for a run in the week since then, and it's a really good motivator.
Is it?
Knowing people that are following you, because you're running, and you might think, oh, I find it a bit hard today, I'll just go a bit slower. And then you think, oh, hang on a minute, this is going to go out, and people are going to see it in their feed. I've better speed up a bit. And so I find it really good to keep me going.
Oh, good.
So I think that's just a motivation tip there for running.
Awesome. So you got any stuff to mention?
No, that's it.
I got two things. First of all, we were talking about this just before we started recording, the Ashley Madison thing.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the dating site for married people or something to have affairs, which we won't go into any of the details of that. But the thing I was going to mention that's bad from their point of view was there's multiple bad things. But the one thing that stuck out for me...
Yeah, we'll just start with the bad things, right?
Yeah, the one thing that stuck out for me was their business practice of charging $19 to do a full delete of people's data.
Right.
So in theory, you know, if someone registered on the site or whatever and then decided they didn't want to use it or wanted to just, you know, wipe all trace of them having used the site, they would charge them $19 and then say, yep, it's been done, you've been removed totally from our databases, etc.
It's so out of order, isn't it?
But then they didn't do it.
Oh, God.
So, or I don't know, for data consistency purposes or whatever. But it must have been a legal point of view where they'd have to keep communication stuff as well anyway about that user. But the tech meme article that was linked to said that Ashley Madison made millions of dollars from charging people $19 to wipe their data or clean it, whatever, but then didn't do it. So then they've now been hacked and all the email addresses and stuff are in the public, which is...
It's incredible, isn't it, really? I mean, I haven't read much about it, but I saw the talk about sort of military and government accounts and the Vatican accounts being included, like thousands of them. And you just think, you know, it's, I know people can be silly, but using your work email address or something like that is just mental.
I was reading the Hacker News comments, which were quite good on it, and it was saying, you know, I can't remember what the date was, but anyway, they're saying this date is going to be etched in the lives of so many people that this huge database of, you know, contact details was released, and it's the first hack. There's been lots of hacks, you know, where people's credit cards have been stolen, details have been stolen, and so on. But this could be the first, you know, hack and publishing of information where it could lead to deaths and physical injuries of people. And there was a
good time to be a divorce lawyer.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can go download all the email addresses and contact them and say, look, you've been on Ashley Madison.
Yeah.
You're probably going to get divorced quite soon. Drop me an email when you need help.
Yeah.
It's good marketing. We should find some... No, that's a bad idea.
No. Don't go there.
Anyway, the other thing just to mention was a book called Smart Cuts that I'm reading, which is quite good.
Is that about hairdressing?
No, it's about... It's a whole bunch of stories about people that have done well in whatever their area is, whether it's entrepreneurs or charity or building a YouTube channel or something like that. And I guess the theory of it is smart cuts, is, you know, taking smart shortcuts
to
have managed to get them to where they want to get to. Yeah. And I know it's one of those things of, you know, reading people's stories in hindsight. Mm. It was perhaps obvious and that tactic won't work in the future going forward. But it's just, I guess the overall premise is about it's lateral thinking rather than, you know, taking the smart cut or shortcut that will get you to where you want to go.
Yeah.
And the interesting example at the beginning of the book is about presidents of the United States. And, you know, in the UK, there's what we spoke about before about career politicians.
Yeah.
You know, straight from university, go into politics, and that's all they've ever done. Well, but if you look at the US presidents, a larger majority of them haven't done that career politics thing. They've all been in the army and have taken leadership positions.
Right.
And the people who go through the whole the US political system, thinking that's the route to go to get to president, most of them don't end up being president. It's more people who've taken leadership positions, whether it's in business or the army or navy or something like that, and then take a shortcut into the presidency route through that.
That's interesting.
So more of a good book on lateral thinking in terms of entrepreneurship and business, I guess. So
yeah,
it's a good read.
Sounds good. And I bet all of those people have been disciplined and not been distracted by shiny new objects.
Well, you never know. Well, they must be. Well, yeah, I guess being president or prime minister, there's so many people trying to grab your time and thrust your ideas and things in front of you.
Or thrusting a pack of Pringles, as Mr. Cameron found.
I find it funny he was just on an EasyJet flight.
Well, I think that was organised.
You reckon?
Yeah, he's a man of the people. He flies an EasyJet.
That's true. Yeah, it's good.
It's good publicity, isn't it?
Yeah. Awesome.
All right, great. Well, I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Yep. All right. Cheers, Martin.
Cheers. Bye.